thus the exalted. And for a while there was silence. Then Judah, the man of afflictions, to whom they had given the word, strode out of the group. He trod before the throne close up to Joseph, took a long breath, and spoke. "Hear me now, my lord, for I will hold speech before your ears and relate how it all came about, and what you did, and how it stands with these and with me, with us brothers all. My words will make clear beyond peradventure that you cannot and may not separate our youngest from us, and you may not keep him to belong to you. And further, that we others, and in particular I, Judah, fourth among us, cannot possibly ever return home to our father without our youngest. And thirdly, I will make my lord an offer and propose to you how you will receive your due in a possible and not in an impossible way. This will be the order of my speech. Therefore let not your anger burn against your servant, and stop him not, I beg you, in the speech which I shall make as the Spirit gives it to me, and my own guilt. You are as Pharaoh. Now I begin at the beginning, and as you began it, for it was thus. When we came down hither, sent by our father, that we might get us bread from this granary like thousands of others, we did not fare like the other thousands, but were segregated and specially dealt with, and led down to your city and before my lord's face. And even there we were unusually treated, for my lord, too, was strange. I mean, he was rough and smooth, soft and hard. In other words, he showed two faces. He questioned us particularly about our family. 'Have you,' asked my lord, 'a father at home or a brother?' 'We have,' we replied, 'a father. He is old. And we have certainly a young brother, too, the youngest, late born to him, and whom he cherishes as the apple of his eye, and keeps him by the hand, because his brother fell away untimely and is gone. Only this one son of his mother remains to our father, so that he clings to him beyond measure.' Answered my lord, 'Bring him down here to me. Not a hair of his head shall be harmed.' 'It cannot be,' we said, 'for the reason we have given. To snatch away his youngest from the father will be his death.' But you replied harshly to your servants, 'By the life of Pharaoh, if ye come not with your youngest brother, surviving from the lovely mother, so shall you not see my face again.'" And Judah continued and said, "I ask my lord whether it was so and so begun, or whether it was not so, but began otherwise than that my lord asked after the boy and insisted on his coming despite our warning. For it pleased my lord to put it that we should clear ourselves from the accusation of spying by bringing him down, and thereby showing evidence that we deal in truth. But what sort of clearing is that, and what sort of accusation? No man can take us for spies. We brothers in Jacob do not look like spies, and it does not clear us to produce our youngest. It is only an arbitrary decision, and only because my lord happens to be bent on seeing our brother with his own eyes. Why? On that point I may not speak. It rests with God." And Jehudah went on in his speech, flung up his leonine head, put out his hand, and spoke. "Lo, this your servant believes in the God of his fathers, and that all knowledge is with him. But what he does not believe is that our God smuggles valuables into the packs of his servants so that they had their purchase money back as well as the goods. That has never been, and we have no tradition whatever of this kind. Not Abram, nor Isaac, nor Jacob, our father, has ever found God silver in his pack that the Lord slipped him. What is not, is not. All that happened was from arbitrary choice, and has its source in one single mystery. But can you now, my lord, can you, after we worked on our father, with the famine to our aid, and got him to lend us his little one for this journey, can you, who relentlessly forced his coming, for without that extraordinary demand he would never have set foot in the land, can you, who said, 'No harm shall come to him here below,' can you hold him as a bondsman, because they found your cup in his bag? That you cannot. But we on our side, and especially your servant Judah, who here holds speech, we cannot come before our father's face without his youngest. Nevermore. We can do it as little as without him we could have come before yours, and not on grounds of personal whim, but on grounds most potent and compelling. Your servant, our father, had spoken to us again and said, 'Go yet once more and buy us a little food.' And we answered him, 'We cannot go down unless you give us our youngest brother, for the man down there who is lord in the land said we must bring him, or we shall not see his face.' Then the gray-haired one set up his lament, a song well known, and which cut us to the heart, like the flute that sobs in the gorges. For he launched into song and said, 'Rachel, the lovely and willing, for whom my young years served Laban the black moon 7 years, heart of my heart, who died on the way and left me only a furlong from the inn, she was my wife, and she gave me, to my loving desire, 2 sons, one in life and one in death, Dumuzi Absu, the lamb, Joseph, the brilliant one, who knew how to get round me so that I gave him all that I had, and Benoni, the little son of death, whom I still have at hand. For the other went out from me as I willed him to, and all the universe was filled with the cry, 'Mangled is he, the lovely one, mangled.' Then fell I on my back, and ever since I have been stiff. But with my stiffened hand I hold this little one who is all I have left, for mangled, mangled, and torn in pieces was the true son. If now you take from me my only one, that the boar mayhap may tread him down, then you will bring down my gray hairs to the grave in such sorrow that it would be too much for the world, and it could not bear it. Full to the outermost rim is the world with the cry, 'Mangled, mangled is the beloved.' And were this one given too, the world must be rent asunder, and be naught." As my lord heard this cry of the flutes, this father lament, then let him judge after his own understanding if we brothers can come before the old man without our youngest, the little man, and confess, 'We have lost him, he is missing,' whether we could hold out before the soul that hangs on Benjamin's soul, and before the world which is full of affliction and cannot bear more, for it would receive its death blow in this blow. And above all, whether I, Judah, his fourth son, who speak, can so come before my father, that you shall judge. For not yet all does my lord know, but far from all. The heart of your servant feels that his word must mount to quite another theme at this hour of our need. It must deal with this mystery here, and can only do so through the revelation of another mystery." A murmuring rose from among the troop of brothers. They stirred uneasily. But Judah the lion raised his voice against it, spoke on, and said, "I took the responsibility before my father, and made myself surety for the little one. Just as now I came close up to your seat to hold this speech, so then I went close up to the father, and took my oath before him in these words, 'Give him into my hand, I vouch for him. If I bring him not again, I will bear the blame before you forever.' Such my vow. Now judge, O strange man, whether I can go back to my father without the little one, lest peradventure I see an evil too great for me and for the world to bear. Accept my offer. Me shall you keep for your bondman instead of the lad, that you may receive your due in a possible and not an impossible way. I myself will expiate for us all. Here before you, strange man, I take the frightful oath we brothers swore. With both hands I take that oath, and I break it in two across my knee. Our 11th brother, the father's ewe lamb, first son of the true wife, him the beast did not rend, but we his brothers sold him into the world." Thus did Judah end his famous speech, thus and not otherwise. He stood there weaving to and fro. The brothers had gone pale, yet they were deeply relieved that the secret was out at last, for it is not impossible to go pale and yet feel relieved at the same time. But two of them cried out, and they were the oldest and the youngest. Reuben shouted, "What do I hear?" And Benjamin did just as he had done before when the steward overtook them. He flung up his arms and gave an indescribable cry. And Joseph? He had got up from his seat, and glittering tears ran down his cheeks. For it happened that the shaft of light which had been falling aslant upon the group of brothers had now moved round, and was coming through an opening at the end of the hall. It fell directly on Joseph's face, and in it his tears glittered like jewels. "All that is Egyptian, go out from me," said he. "Out with you, go. For I invited God and the world to this play. But now shall God alone be witness." Reluctantly they obeyed. Maisakme put his hands on the backs of the scribes on the platform, urged them towards the door with nods and gestures, and helped them out. The crowds vanished from the entrance, though it is not likely they moved very far. They all stood in and out of the book-room with their heads cocked in the direction of the hall. Some even held their hands to their ears. And Joseph, heedless of the tears on his face, stretched out his arms and made himself known. Often before now he had done the same, and made people stare, giving them to think that some higher power moved in him other than what he was himself, and mingled in his single person with a dreamy and seductive charm. But now, quite simply, and despite the outstretched arms, with a deprecating little laugh, he said, "Children, here I am. I am your brother Joseph."
"Of course he is! Of course he is!" shouted Benjamin, almost choking with joy.
He stumbled forwards and up the steps, fell on his knees, and stormily embraced the new-found brother's knees.
"Yashup! Joseph L. Yehosef!" he sobbed, with his head tipped back to look up in his brother's face. "You are! You are! Of course you are! You are not dead! You have overturned the great abode of the shadow of death! You have risen up to the seventh threshold! You are set as Metatron and inner prince! I knew it! I knew it! You are lifted up on high! The Lord has made you a seat like to his own! But me you know still, your mother's son, and you fanned the air with my hand."
"Little one," said Joseph, "little one." He raised Benjamin up and put their heads together. "Do not talk. It is none of it so great nor so remote, and I have no such glory. And the great thing of all is that we are 12 once more." "Wrangle not." He put his arm around Benoni's shoulders and went down with him to the brothers. Ah, yes, the brothers. How was it with them as they stood there? Some stood with legs apart and arms dangling awkwardly down almost to their knees. They stared open-mouthed into space. Some held their clenched fists upon breasts that heaved up and down with the fury of their panting. All of them had gone pale at Judah's confession. Now they were crimson, a deep dark red like the color of pine trunks, red as that time when, squatting on their hands, they had seen Joseph coming towards them in the coat of many colors. Without Benoni's rapturous cry, they would not have believed or even grasped what the man said. But now the sons of Rachel came with their arms about each other to stand among them, and a mere association, for all of them had long since felt that this man had something or other to do with Joseph, swelled and changed into an identification, and what wonder that their brains felt as though they would burst. At one moment they would succeed in putting together the sacrificed lamb yonder and the Lord here in his glory. The next moment the two ideas fell apart again. They had to work to hold them together, and that was because their chagrin and horror were so great. "Come here to me," said Joseph as he approached. "Yes, yes, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold down into Egypt. But never mind about that, for you did me no harm. Tell me, my father is truly alive? Speak to me, don't be afraid. Judah, that was a great speech you made. You made it forever and ever. I dearly embrace and congratulate you. I greet you and kiss your lion's head. See, it is the kiss you gave me in front of the Meneans. Today I give it back, my brother, and it is all blotted out. I kiss you all in one. Never think I am angry that you sold me down here. That all had to be. God did it, not you. El Shaddai estranged me early from my father's house. He separated me according to his plan. He sent me on ahead of you to be your provider, and in his beautiful providence he brought it about that I should feed Israel together with all strangers in time of dearth. That was a perfectly simple, practical matter, though physically important, of course, but nothing to make a shout about, for your brother is no God-hero, no harbinger of spiritual salvation. He is just a farmer and a manager. Remember how your sheaves bowed down to mine in the dream I prattled about when I was a young brat, and the stars that made curtsies? Well, that has turned out to mean nothing so very extraordinary, just that my fathers and brothers would thank me for what I could give them. When a man receives bread, he says not Hosanna in the highest, but just thank you very much. However, bread there has to be. Bread comes first, before all the hosannas. Now do you understand how simple the thing was that the Lord meant? And will you not believe that I am alive? You know yourselves that I did not stay in the pit, because the children of Ishmael drew me up out of it, and you sold me to them. Put your hands on me. Take hold of me. Feel and see that I am your brother Joseph, and I am alive. Two or three of them actually did touch him. They cautiously ran their hands down his garment and timidly grinned. Then, it was only a joke, and you just behaved like a prince? Asked Issachar. And you are really only our brother Joseph? Only, he answered. That is the best that I am. But you must try to understand that I am both. I am Joseph, whom the Lord Pharaoh has set as father and prince in all Egypt. Joseph I am, arrayed in the splendor of this world. Then, said Zebulun, we must not say you are only the one and not the other, for actually you are both in one. We had a glimmering of it all along, and it is good that you are not the lord of the market all the way through, else it would go hard with us. But under your fine raiment you are our brother Joseph, who will protect us from the wrath of the keeper of the market. But you must understand, my lord. Will you drop it, stupid? Just leave off this lord business once and for all. You must see that we have to seek the protection of the keeper of the market against our brother, for in time past we did him ill.